Support for this podcast comes from the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, presenting A Frame of Mind, a new podcast taking a look at race in America through the lens of the museum's past, present, and future. Available now wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at nelson-atkins.org.
This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. The Kansas legislative session is off and running, and there's lots of talk from Governor Laura Kelly about eliminating the sales tax on food, and more talk about freezing college tuition rates and cutting each taxpayer a check for $250. Republicans are echoing some of those ideas, but they're also talking about a different need, and that's shoring up the state pension fund, which has a long-term unfunded liability totaling $5 billion. So which vision for the future will hold sway during this election year? We're about to kick that around with two reporters who keep close tabs on the legislature for a living. They are Jim McLean, who covers the state capitol for the Kansas News Service, based here at KCUR. Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Also with us is Noah Taborda, who's a reporter with the Kansas Reflector and a former reporter here at KCUR. Noah, good morning.
How are you, Steve?
Well, let's begin, Jim, with Governor Kelly's State of the State address from earlier this week. You know, she talked about getting rid of the food sales tax, freezing college tuition rates, and funding a state water plan. Analysts call it something of a campaign speech. Jim, why was that?
Well, Steve,
because it was
it's because, yeah, she's running for re-election, Steve, and she talked a lot in her speech about her quote unquote first term accomplishments, suggesting, of course, that she has more that she would like to do in a second term. So it was a long list of things that she thinks she has done to put the state quote unquote back on track. And of course, these proposals she's talking about, eliminating the sales tax on food and giving everybody an income tax rebate, $250 if you're an individual, $500 for couples. Those are election year proposals designed to ingratiate her to voters out there, particularly middle class voters, lower and middle class voters who are pinched in the given inflation. So, you know, that's what that's all about.
Noah, did lawmakers end up looking at it as a political speech?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and I think Republicans, some of them didn't blame her for it. Senate President Ty Masterson himself, after the speech, said, yeah, it was a campaign speech, but he said he'd do the same if it was his year up for re-election as well. So, yeah.
So we start the session in complete agreement, at least on one thing here, Noah, it sounds like. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if we're going to get many more agreements as we go on, but take the agreements where we can get them.
Well, Jim, I think one central factor controlling the outcome of this session, the fate of this session, is this huge budget surplus that now totals several billion dollars. The governor wants to cut the sales tax on food, axe it, to use her term. Kansas has one of the highest food sales taxes in the nation. Is that going to happen?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Steve. In the Republican response, House Speaker Ron Reichman talked about, quote unquote, ratcheting down the sales tax, not just on food, but on everything else as well. So clearly, for years, there has been a desire to start edging that sales tax down, and food particularly. So I think Republicans would be hard-pressed to do nothing on that front. However, eliminating it in its entirety would cost somewhere between $450 million and $500 million a year. And so Republicans are talking about being fiscally responsible and trying to take it more slowly. So I think something will happen in terms of a sales tax reduction this year. I think the trick will be this. A couple of years ago, the governor vetoed a tax-cutting bill that had, as a component, a reduction in the sales tax, but there was a lot of other stuff in there that Republicans wanted that she didn't, so she vetoed it. And so the question is, you know, what are Republicans going to want to put on the table in exchange for giving Governor Kelly something in terms of reducing or eliminating the sales tax on food and groceries?
Well, Noah, Republicans have bounced back with a proposal that's maybe not nearly as sexy, doesn't really connect with people as much, but it may be just as important, and that's digging the state pension fund out of arrears. What do they want to do? And I should say that Attorney General Derek Schmidt, who's going to be the likely GOP candidate for governor, has pitched this idea. What's their plan here?
Right. So, you know, as you mentioned, House Speaker Reichman talked about investing federal stimulus into the CAPERS retirement system, which has a long-term unfunded liability of about $5 billion. So the goal is to really shore that down so that teachers, firefighters, other public employees know it'll be there for them when they need it is basically their goal there. There's been a lot of discussion in the
Noah, you still there?
Amortization, trying to do that. But this time, that is yes, I am still here. Yeah. But this time around, that is not part of their goal there.
Yeah, Jim. Again, this is one of those ideas, like the food sales tax. Mm-hmm. You can make a very compelling argument that you got to cut taxes on food. We have one of the highest rates in the nation, and dealing with this pension liability, that strikes me as pretty important stuff too.
It is very important. As you pointed out, though, it doesn't have that immediate political appeal. I should say, though, that when you hear unfunded liability in the range of $5 billion, that sounds awfully scary. But what that really means is if the pension fund had to pay all of its obligations, all of its future obligations all at once, it would be $5 billion short of those obligations, which, of course, is not a realistic scenario. Mm. Even Governor Kelly is talking about putting a lot of money. She wants to spend about $250 million catching the state up on payments that it was supposed to make to shore up the Capers Retirement Fund. So even she is acknowledging there's an issue there and wanting to spend some money on it. But again, that $5 billion figure sounds awfully scary until you put it in the context of what it really represents. But again, that does sound like prudent fiscal management, and that's the argument that I think Republicans are going to stand on.
Well, you know, if you have a $3 billion surplus, though, Jim, and you spend $250 million of it on the pension fund, that still leaves a lot of change rolling around the halls of the statehouse.
It does. And the governor is making a concerted effort. In addition to wanting to cut the food sale tax and give these income tax rebates, she's also trying to pay down debt. She wants to spend about $600 million in paying down debts. She wants to pay off bonds that were floated to dredge the a reservoir near the Wolf Creek Power Plant and the Bio-Agro Defense Center in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
And so Republicans and the Democrat are on the same page to a certain extent in terms of the debt reduction.
Well, Noah, she wants to freeze college tuition rates. You point out in a story in the Kansas Reflector that tuition rates are up more than 80% at KU and K-State over the past 15 years. I didn't realize the number was that high. Tuition at KU now stands at about $5,600 a semester. How was this idea received?
You know, I think that there are some people, especially the Board of Regents, who were asking for that money. I think a lot of Democrats supported the idea. I think there were a good deal of Republicans that were uneasy with the idea of, you know, spending more money. We just talked about the big budget surplus. They've repeated over and over again that, oh, you look back a decade ago, we were in a similar situation, and that money kind of just up and disappeared almost. You know, the money can evaporate quite quickly. So I think there was a little bit of uneasiness from the Republican side of the aisle in terms of committing that money. But Democrats, the Board of Regents, were very excited about the possibility of getting more young people into the state, having a stronger pool that could maybe remain in the state, and then eventually, hopefully, drive business and economy as well.
You know, Noah, the math on this is pretty simple. $5,600 a semester, that's what, $11,000 a year just for tuition. You throw in room and board, you throw in books, and pretty soon you're staring at, what, $17,000, $20,000 a year to go to KU or K-State.
Yeah, the affordability issue is a big deal. And, you know, when you talk about earlier, a campaign speech, you know, trying to get yourself in the good graces, there are lower and lower amounts of people going to college year after year. The college going rate is decreasing.
NPR had a story today about that. Yeah.
Right. And I think that especially when you look at brain drain and you look at a lot of, you know, smart, intelligent people leaving the state, I think there's a concerted goal to reverse that and ensure that we have young students able to afford going to school regardless of their financial situation.
So what's the price tag on just freezing college tuition rates where they are, Noah?
Right. So the request from the Kansas Board of Regents is to pay $45.7 million so that they can freeze tuition for one more year. This is something that universities have been doing. The University of Kansas has done it 3 years in a row. The other five Board of Regent universities have done it 2 out of the past 3 years, but it's just reached a point where the Board of Regents no longer feels that these universities are going to be able to maintain that without that $45.7 million.
Hmm. Jim McLean, the other issue that looms out there, and it's going to make a lot of headlines this session, is this debate over critical race theory, which has to do with how candid teachers can be with students when it comes to the teaching of race and the history of race in this country. How much attention is this issue getting even now in the early going of the session?
Well, it got a lot of attention during the interim, Steve. Christie, there were some legislators, particularly House legislators, who made it an issue during the interim, and they held hearings on it, essentially charging that elements of critical race theory are being snuck into curriculum in the state's public schools. Of course, all the educators in the state, the folks in charge of the educational system from the State Board of Education on down to superintendents, said no, critical race theory is not being taught per se in Kansas schools, but that people teaching history need to be honest about slavery and the legacy of discrimination that comes from it. And so it's going to be a big issue. Frankly, it's one of those culture war issues, Steve, that resonates with certain people in the Republican base. And last year and the year before, as you know, that culture war dividing line issue was the pandemic and what is the state government's proper role in responding to the pandemic. I think critical race theory could well be this year's culture war issue. And because of that, and because it is an election year, it could well get a lot of attention. Republicans are talking about, quote unquote, increasing curriculum transparency in public schools.
Jim, you've been over there for a long time. There's always a culture war issue in an election year, isn't there?
Pretty much always, and of late in particular, the last 10 years. I mean, these are issues that are probably everybody in the political realm is doing polling constantly, and they know what resonates with their base and what doesn't. And what it appears, this is an issue, as you know, that is going on, that is being in play nationwide. It was in play in the Virginia governor's race and other places. And so I just think it's one of those things that politicians understand. They can whip their base up into a frenzy. And regardless of whether it is a real issue or not, it is a political issue.
Hmm. Let's go to Tuck from Topeka. Tuck, you're on the show. Nice to have you. Good morning.
Well, thank you. I've known Jim for a long time. He's only been here about 50 years. Hey, what's going to happen in the out years? In other words, they spend all this money down, and typically, you know, they enact new programs, do things, and then 3 years from now, we have no money. Have they looked at that?
Well, Jim, you've been there for 50 years, so you know the answer to this question, I think.
That's Tuck Duncan. He's been here more than 50 years, I can tell you that. But he's a very well-respected lobbyist in the State House, knows an awful lot about what's going on. And, Tuck, I think the answer to your question is, I think, of course, that's what Republicans are arguing, that we need to look farther down the road in regard to, because they say a lot of the money that's now piling up in the state treasury is the result of federal COVID relief and that we can't just go on a spending spree. So that's the argument they're making. On the other hand, what Governor Kelly is arguing is that there's also a lot of new economic activity going on in the state, and so therefore some of that money that's coming into the treasury will be reoccurring. And so I think you have that argument going on. But even Governor Kelly wants to put another $600 million into the quote-unquote rainy day fund. So she's not talking about spending the entire budget surplus that exists right now. So I think both sides are trying to strike some sort of a balance.
Well, Tuck, I appreciate the question. Thank you.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
You bet. We have State Senator David Haley now. He's a Democrat from Kansas City, Kansas, on the line. Senator Haley, good morning.
Good morning, Steve, and most informative what you and, of course, the learned Jim McLean and Noah and even Tuck Duncan have brought to this process. I'm learning to Topeka right now. And the other elephant in the room that hasn't been touched on yet, of course, is redistricting. Mm-hmm. You know, we've about the various areas of spending and how we hope to address in a meaningful way and this legislature address the onerous tax of the food sales tax and also critical race theory, which for me, representing Wyandotte County and as a person of color whose family actually did the story of Roots, which talked about race, not going in. But when we look at having voices reflected, having districts reflected, and as they resonate not just in Topeka from our districts, but also D.C., that's a major concern. Kansas is not all ultra-conservative, and we are very concerned about how redistricting is going to play out in this particular, especially for the 3rd Congressional District.
Yeah, well, Senator Haley, I appreciate those comments. And Noah, one of the big issues, as he alluded to, is this, what's going to happen to the 3rd District of Kansas? That's the congressional district that encompasses Johnson and Wyandotte counties right now. A Democrat, Sharice Davids, represents that district. But there's talk it's going to have to change. The district's going to have to be reconfigured because of population shifts that have occurred over the last decade. How big of an issue is this going to be? What do you see happening on that front?
Right. I think that's the big question. On one hand, you have Republicans hoping to shore up the other 3 districts and possibly chip away at Sharice Davids' hold in the 3rd. And on the other hand, you have Democrats trying to do the opposite. This is going to be an arduous task, and I know that Senate President Ty Masterson has said that he hopes to have maps for Kansans to look at, some preliminary maps to look at, as soon as the end of this week. Maybe it'll be next week. So we'll start to get a sense there of where they're looking, but it's been an interesting process without a lot of rules established before some of the hearings. So there was a lot of uncertainty as to how they are approaching this issue. So once we have those maps, we'll have a clear idea. But I think it's pretty clear that Republicans are hoping to chip away at that 3rd district hold.
Jim McLean, the congressional map is one element of this redistricting process. Lawmakers are also looking at redrawing House and Senate districts for the state legislature. Who does that job?
Well, the same folks who are redrawing the congressional districts are going to redraw those. I mean, the legislators are going to essentially redraw their own districts. And Republicans have big majorities in both the House and Senate, so you've got to think that those initial maps at least would be advantageous politically to the Republicans. And we saw a big shift, frankly, Steve, in the last couple of election cycles. After the Brownback years, we saw a lot of moderate Republicans elected to the state legislature, and then that changed in the last cycle. And so, you know, how these lines get drawn, I mean, computer programs are very exacting. They know down to the precinct level what kind of performance they're going to get from voters. And so how these lines are drawn are very important in terms of then who gets elected to the state legislature and, of course, then to Congress and the state board of education, board of education.
Jim, what happens if the legislature can't agree on maps?
Well, it goes to court, Steve, like it did 10 years ago, and then a judge has to decide. And then the critical issue there, of course, is what are the criteria by which you judge whether the lines are fair or not? There's a term that has been thrown around for decades in redistricting battles called community of interest. And the question is whether that's still going to be of paramount importance, even to the courts, in deciding whether or not these lines are fair. And that particularly comes into play when you talk about where Wyandotte County, of course, ends up. There's a large minority population there. It's now in the 3rd District, where Sharice Davids represents that congressional district. And you hear a lot of talk about the part of Wyandotte County going somewhere else and whether or not that would be fair to the minority community and the community of voters there in Wyandotte County. So those are the issues that are in play perennially, or every 10 years, I suppose. And those are the issues that are in play this year. And the question then is, if it goes to court, what are the criteria on which the court will decide what's fair and what's not?
Wyandotte County, even some talk, it could wind up in the 1st congressional district, which
right.
is the one that borders, touches on Colorado out west. So interesting.
Well, that was attempted the last time around. And of course, people just, threw up their hands and say, yeah, that just doesn't make any sense. But, the population shift is what it is. And that district, which starts at the Colorado border and moves, frankly, more than 2/3 across the state, has to get bigger geographically to accommodate population loss.
Let's go to Patrick from Kansas City, Missouri. Patrick, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
I live in Kansas, but I'm a voter in Kansas, but I happen to be in KCMO right now. The question I have is about medical marijuana going forth, because I think Governor Kelly said she'd sign it. I was curious what Jim would say about the conservatives finally recognizing the fiscal reasons to have medical marijuana in Kansas.
Well, let me go to Noah for that question. The House passed legalized medical marijuana last year. The Senate is going to look at it this year. Noah, how do you see it playing out?
That's a great question. I think that it probably won't be the first thing on their agenda. We've got a couple of these hot button issues that we've been talking about earlier that I think will be their first priority. I do think that there's a lot of interest across Kansas, so I do think it probably will get some attention at some point down the line. And we've also got efforts to kind of establish a safety net of sorts in the House now as well, where Democratic leadership has proposed two constitutional amendments, one to legalize recreational marijuana, probably a little bit optimistic, and one to legalize medical marijuana. So they're starting to establish different ways of going about it. I think as time progresses, the pressure probably mounts, more and more people get on board. So at some point, I'd expect the Senate to at least discuss it.
You know, Jim, so much of what happens on the Missouri side of the state line when it comes to issues like marijuana involves a citizen-led initiative petitions, where you get voters to sign petitions and you put something to a vote by bypassing the legislature. But you don't hear much of that happening on the Kansas side of the state line. Why is that?
Well, because we don't have petition and initiative in Kansas. Many, many years ago, former Governor Joan Finney tried to get that done, kind of a populist approach to government,
right.
But she couldn't get it through the legislature. And as you know, with the Medicaid expansion issue in Missouri, how complicated that got, even though the public voted for it, right? And so so we don't have petition and initiative. What has to happen in Kansas is the legislature has to vote to put something on the general election ballot or the primary ballot for voters to consider. And so that takes a two-thirds majority to get that done. So that's why the Democratic initiatives, constitutional amendment initiatives on medical marijuana and recreational marijuana are pretty far-fetched, because if they can't even get a majority vote in the House and Senate to pass a medical marijuana bill, how do they hope to get a two-thirds majority to put it on the ballot? But that notwithstanding, I agree with Noah. I do think there is already some attention being paid to the medical marijuana bill in the Senate. There was a briefing earlier this week, and Senate President Ty Masterson told me in an interview that it will be worked this session. And if you look at the vote in the House last year, it passed by a wide margin. So I do think this is something probably we're close to having its time come.
You know, you think about medical marijuana, you think about a related issue, Noah, like Medicaid expansion. It's been talked about for years in Kansas. Does it have any chance this year?
You know, after what we've seen the past couple of years, I think it would be a little optimistic to say that it's got a strong chance to get through. I'm sure that Democrats will add it on as amendments to several bills. Last year, just about every time Medicaid came up, it was dead on arrival, immediately shut down. My gut says that'll probably be the same this year. Again, you know, maybe if everything goes the Republicans' way, maybe they'll feel generous toward Democrats and maybe consider it. But I think that as things stand now, I'd say it's probably unlikely.
Jim, we haven't uttered the word COVID in this conversation, and maybe that's a good thing. But there's all this talk over here in the metro about new mask mandates going up and on the Kansas side of the state line. I've lost track almost of what mandates, if anything, the Kelly administration is still considering or pursuing. Where are we on that front in Topeka?
Well, we're not talking about mandates anymore, at least not mandates being handed down from the governor's office and the state level. Governor Kelly as much as said that the other day when she issued a new executive order that allows hospitals to put people working on the front lines who may not have all the proper credentials in an emergency. And so she issued that executive order the other day at the request of hospitals in the state, which are being overrun, of course, by COVID patients now that Omicron is spreading so quickly. But she said at that news conference that there will be no statewide mask mandate, no shutting down of schools, no shutting down of the economy. That's been tried. Of course, there was a lot of pushback. And so all those battles are pretty much being fought at the local level these days.
You know, the other word we haven't talked about in this conversation, Noah, is abortion. And I'm betting that come June, July, and early August, we're going to hear a lot about that issue, because there's that constitutional amendment that's going before voters then to clarify whether women have a right to an abortion or not in Kansas. In the meantime, do you expect the legislature to do anything on that issue, given what the U.S. Supreme Court has been doing in recent months?
I'd expect that abortion politics are probably going to take a back seat for the next several months. As you said, we have the Value Them Both amendment coming up here in a little bit. But as of now, I think that most Kansas anti-abortion groups, they really haven't taken the Texas approach. where they banned abortions at 6 weeks. I don't think that it's going to be a big issue in terms of the legislature right now, but come August, come June, come July, as we get closer to that, I'd expect legislators to start wrapping it up.
And speaking of wrapping up, let's do that right now. And I think I mentioned this on the in the conversation about the Missouri General Assembly, but there are times when I think it'd be fun to go back and cover a legislative session. And this one in Topeka sounds to me like it would be a really good time because so much is going
on. You're welcome anytime, Steve. Come right on over.
I appreciate that, Jim. That's Jim McLean, covers the state capitol for the Kansas News Service based here at KCUR. Noah Taborda also joined us. He's with the Kansas Reflector. Gentlemen, thanks for the great rundown. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.